In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xenial. But what is a Xenial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
Welcome to the Xenial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
And today, Mike's going to be leading the charge here today. We're going to be talking about hearing-impaired jungle cats, apparently.
Yes.
And little joke for anybody that doesn't know, it'll be explained. T-Swizzle. Right?
Yes. Yeah. You know what? There's actually a similarity between the two. And this is some new news that broke, I saw over the weekend, I believe. I heard of some of it a little bit beforehand, but okay. Let's get down to it because I actually want to move this one along. This one sounds really interesting. There's a lot of information.
Okay.
Okay. So long story short, I'm not sure if many of our listeners have actually been familiar with artists that tend to re-record their material. Sometimes they're doing.
I mean,
there are some people, and you catch them.
Why would they be re-recording their material? I mean, that would be a question of mine. I mean,
right?
Better equipment nowadays than maybe when they originally recorded it.
Sometimes that's the case.
Different people in the band, maybe, and re-recording with different people in the band.
Yeah, sometimes it creates a different flavor. I like hearing that. Obviously, there's like people that release remasters, greatest hits records, that kind of thing. I've seen in the case of some bands like Megadeth, where there's entire portions of albums completely lost, and they have to completely recreate. That's one of the things that Mustaine, back when he injured himself and lost the use of his left arm for a while. Well, what he decided to do while he was in therapy and recovery was to go through his original masters, the master tapes, digitize all the tapes, and completely remix them from scratch, from the raw tracks, using modern recording methods. Now, this can be very useful. As a matter of fact, Kiss is a very well-known band for being a powerhouse of a live band, but their recording quality was total crap back in the day. And it's not the recording quality itself that was bad. It was just the mix and the medium that it was put out. It just didn't fit well with them.
Well, and the musicianship, sorry for all of you Kiss fans, including the one in the room, the musicianship is kind of not very good.
Well, Kiss is constantly regarded as the biggest brand in rock and roll.
Yeah, I mean,
because those sons of guns know how to market, man.
They do, but then you actually look to learn how to play their stuff, and it's like, really?
Is that simple? Oh, it's very simple.
It's one of the most simple and basic rock bands I've ever seen.
Well, sometimes the simplicity is what creates the. It's what creates the reason why it's easy for anybody to grasp, which is why it's appealing.
So there's many reasons why people would re-record their music.
Yeah, and there's a lot of older artists. Kiss is a good example. They've re-recorded stuff. Their Destroyer album actually was completely remixed from scratch, and there's a new release that came out in like 2015, I think.
Okay.
And it sounds drastically better.
I'm so
dependent upon opinion.
I'm so not going to rush out and get that.
I understand completely.
All right. So
if you ever get curious, just listen to the damn thing on YouTube.
So how is the re-recording of albums pertaining to hearing impaired jungle cats, i.e. Def Leppard?
Okay.
And Taylor Swift.
Okay. Well, there are many reasons why this is done. Okay. Sometimes those albums are lost. Sometimes artists want to be able to have a version of that song that they had as a hit because they don't have the original rights to those recordings, because a lot of the times when bands are young, they'll sign over the rights to their masters. That was a big problem with the Beatles, right?
Well, that pertains to the podcast that we had the last time.
Yes.
You did a Mike Takeover podcast where you spoke about the big fire that happened for
the UMG fire 2008. Okay,
and all the things lost there.
Well, I have a couple of stories, and Universal Music Group is actually involved in one of them.
Oh, boy.
Yeah,
this is great. Who are we going to hear about first?
We're going to hear about Def Leppard first, okay?
Hearing impaired jungle cats.
Yes, sir. Okay,
yay.
So Def Leppard was a very young band in 1977 when they were first formed. As a matter of fact, their drummer, the guy who famously now has only one arm, was 15 years old when he joined. Okay,
wow.
These guys were all young, and they were signed in around 1979.
Okay,
to Universal Music Group.
The band is older than me.
Yeah, they were signed before 1980.
Frightening.
Yeah. Can we
claim Def Leppard, the band itself, not the people in the band, but the band itself? Mm-hmm. Can we claim Def Leppard as a Xenial? Do we get to claim that?
I guess. I mean as a band, I mean, they're made up of boomers, but I'm not sure.
I've claimed some fictional characters as Zennials, like Harry Potter is a Zennial.
Well, that makes sense.
Because he was actually born in 1980 in the continuity of the books and whatnot.
He was?
Yes, he was born July 31st, 1980.
I'll be damned.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, the
wow,
books,
so those books, when they were kids,
in the 90s.
Came... Oh.
The books take place in the 90s, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I did not know that. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
It's interesting.
Nice little side point of information. That's
definitely
fun.
Interesting. So yes, Harry Potter, Neville Longbottom, Hermione Granger, and Ron Weasley.
They're all Zennials.
They would all be Zennials technically. Technically, so would like Ginny and maybe Fred and George Weasley, because they're
wouldn't all the kids around that time be Zennials?
Draco. We can take Draco.
Yeah.
We'll take the blonde lesbian. Sorry, a joke I saw somewhere. Anyway,
I ain't touching that. Yeah.
So many comments right now, but anyway, Def Leppard formed in 1979. Ghost.
Right. Okay. So Def Leppard were actually formed in 77. They were signed in 79.
Signed in 79. Sorry.
Okay. They are actually, interestingly enough, technically part of the new wave of British heavy metal, which is, if anybody knows, are direct influences for powerhouses like Metallica and Anthrax and all them. Slayer. I mean, those guys, that works them in with bands like Motorhead and Tigers of Pantang.
Yeah.
And like all these huge, huge, huge metal bands.
Like Wasp, right?
Wasp was, I think, another one. I'm not too keen on my NWO BHM history, but I just thought it was a cool side point. That being said.
Anti-Nowhere League. Sorry.
Anti-Nowhere League is another one. Yes, yeah. Ooh, those guys are good. Okay. Now, they were signed by Universal Music Group in 1979. They were very young. They were only together for 2 years. This is the first record deal that they ever actually got. Wonderful. So one of the things they did back in the beginning of everything was they signed over the rights to their master recordings on some of the biggest albums they ever came out with.
Well, of course they would have, because they wanted a contract no matter what.
They wanted to get a contract. They're like, well, you got to do this. Okay, cool. That's it. You know, that's just what happens commonly, especially with bands that don't have the negotiating capability.
Especially in the pre-internet days where there was no way to put out your music. Other than by having a record company sign you, help you record your album, and then pay money to the radio stations for them to play your album.
Absolutely.
I mean, that was the only way you got any kind of exposure back in that time period.
Oh yeah. You got it. You had to play the game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you had to play the game. So over the years, these guys obviously learned of the importance of owning the masters of their recordings.
Hell yeah.
However, they were signed to Universal,
which
meant Universal as a company knew how important those masters were.
Powerhouse, they knew that they wanted the residuals on that for years and years to come.
Those big guys, those guys like Universal, Sony, NBC, all of those huge, huge, huge labels knew how important retaining masters were, and it came down to how important the artist themselves was or how unimportant they were and whether or not they felt their potential was really big. Like, Ray Charles retained the masters to his recordings, his original recordings, all of them he did. But the reason why was because they're like, okay, well, this is just some blind black piano player. Sure, whatever, give them to him. Who's going to give a rat's ass at that time?
And then people did give rat's asses.
And they gave many rat's asses. And those guys, that label lost out on that stuff. Now, that being said, moving right along.
Well, I want to add, it's also probably why another artist during the 1950s and 60s made it a point to put his name on songwriting credit for every single song that he sang, and wouldn't sing a song unless he got songwriting credit.
Oh,
and
in fact,
was Elvis? famously refused by Dolly Parton. He wanted to do a cover of I Will Always Love You.
And he wanted songwriting credit for that recording?
He wanted songwriting credit, and Dolly Parton refused him.
Nope.
Yeah, Dolly Parton said, cool. Hell no. She made some bank off Whitney Houston later as a result of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but exactly.
She didn't want to give him songwriting credit because he would not record the song unless he got to put his name down as a songwriter, because then he got extra rights instead of just performing it.
Well, I tell you what, though, that would have sounded fantastic. Elvis duetting with Dolly Parton
himself. He was just
missing. What? No, yeah, come on.
That would have been as bad as when he tried to do Unchained Melody. Have you heard his version of Unchained Melody? The Righteous Brothers song?
Was it written by the Righteous Brothers?
Yeah, it's their song. I believe so.
Because I've heard his version, and it seems much more...
His version is awful.
It seems... I don't mean to be insulting by this, but it seems super white.
Yes,
you know
but
what I
they
mean?
Were too.
Like, it's base. Oh no, they sing the hell out of that.
But they were. I'm just saying they were white.
It's a basic ballad, but holy smokes,
he can't hit any of the white notes. Now you've got me saying it, and I feel like a terrible racist. He can't hit any of the high notes, is what I was trying to say.
Oh yeah, no. He made it for his crooning baritone self, and it just didn't work. Did he get royalties for that?
No, I don't know if he did or not.
That was more just set up as a cover.
I don't know if he did or not. I don't know what the situation happened with that, but yeah, I think that may have been more set up as a cover. But yeah,
okay. Crazy.
So, back to
moving back to our blind jungle cats.
Yes, hearing impaired, not blind.
Oh, sorry, blind.
They're hearing impaired.
Okay,
they're deaf.
Look, I've only had like one cup of coffee. Okay, I'm working on my second.
Okay, don't spill it.
Don't spill the coffee. Instead, I'm spilling the tea. All right, so here's what's going on. Over the years, deaf leopard kind of learned the importance of knowing that they needed their masters, but unfortunately, Universal wouldn't allow them. To buy them off of them. They wouldn't allow it. So Def Leppard's like, you know what? Well, they had a monetary value, but over time, Def Leppard didn't have enough money to buy these masters.
Yeah.
Okay. So Universal set up a recording contract with them that allowed them to slowly have slightly more and more say in the marketing of these songs. Essentially, at the beginning, Universal was like, well, we know what to do with all this to make you a musical powerhouse. So we'll run some stuff by you. Bit by bit, but we'll have majority of the control. So if we're going to use you in advertisements, we're going to put you on the radio, we're going to put together greatest hits compilations, but we are going to design all this stuff for you. And then at the end of it, we can get your approval on whether or not you want to do this, because these are your recordings. We want you to be able to have a say and be comfortable, right? Well, this expansion of this power on Def Leppard's side continued to expand. They didn't own the masters, but they owned the rights to they owned control of them. So that's eventually weird. There was a contractual obligation that was added to the contract between Def Leppard and Universal Records at one point. I don't know when it was. However, they've been around for, at this point, they had been around for 20, 30 years. There was a contractual obligation that stated that their masters could not be used by UMG for anything without their express permission. Okay, well, that means we want to put together a greatest hits record. We need you guys to okay this. Okay, cool. We want to use it in a commercial. Okay, cool. They have to get an okay. Yeah. And sometimes they said no. But at that point, if you would notice, Def Leppard was really valid throughout all the 80s, dropped a little bit in the 90s, and then came back in the mid-90s when they came out with a new tour and a new album, still under UMG. Started skyrocketing back up, and in about the mid-2000s, they started to taper off a little bit.
I think one thing that really helped Def Leppard during the 90s was the whole acoustic setting stuff for a lot of music, spurred on by the Unplugged TV series on MTV.
Yes. Yeah.
A lot of the bands that went on there. What I found interesting, that's when I started actually listening to some Def Leppard stuff, was the late 90s.
Yeah.
I wasn't a fan in the 80s when they were the big glitter hair band.
Def Leppard's always been a guilty pleasure for me. They're like the only band out of the 80s that I really, really like.
Well, and I still am not overly fond of the original recordings of the songs, but when you hear the acoustic versions of them, I love songs that are not originally written to be acoustic songs, translated into an acoustic setting.
Oh yeah.
That show you the true musicianship of the people playing. And like a song like Pour Some Sugar on Me, that's such a cheesy stripper song.
Yeah.
I mean, not
to hear it in acoustic.
ooh. Jot this down. Actually, I will jot this down. Idea for a future podcast. Top 5 stripper songs. No, there's a reason for it, dude.
Okay.
If you can imagine, Marilyn Manson, stripper song.
Oh, dude.
So much fun. Anyway,
oh, yeah.
But that song itself is just a cheesy song.
Okay. Right? Yeah, yeah, totally.
Pour Some Sugar on Me, cheesy song. But then to hear an acoustic version of that song, it's a really jammy little song.
Oh, yeah.
It's still got cheesy lyrics.
Yeah.
But to hear them jam it out on acoustic guitars, it's nice. It's got a real good feel to it.
Yeah.
It's got some energy to it. It's totally different.
It shows you the strength of what a song actually retains when you move it to another different
another
format.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's great. Okay. Now, all of that so far, here's what happened. They added the contract,
the contract add to get control over their stuff.
To get control
over their
stuff.
They still don't own
them,
but they can control how they're used.
Exactly. That's the deal. So over the years, at around 2010, 2011 or so, they started offering, because there was still a monetary value to those masters, and that's lined out in the contract.
Yeah.
Okay. So what they decide to do is they go, hey, we've spent 30, 35 years, 40 years together trying to get this enough monetary value and enough power to be able to buy our own stuff.
Yeah.
Now, there are many bands that have bought their masters.
It'd be about 30 years at that point, but...
give or take, yeah, 30, maybe 35. It's been around it a long time. We're looking at 97 or 77 to 2010.
Okay, so...
well, so it's been, 32. 30, 32, something like that. 33. Now, that being said, there are many bands that have bought their masters out from a label after they sold them.
Yeah.
Metallica's done it. Their original remasters, the new releases, are under Blackened Records, which is their own personal label.
Instead of being under Rush, Elektra, right?
Huh?
They were under Elektra before, weren't they?
They were under Elektra. Yeah. Yeah, they were under Elektra, which was owned by, I think they were also either Universal or they were Atlantic or something.
Yeah.
Warner. Elektra's owned by Warner.
Okay.
So Metallica has done that. Rush has purchased their masters. And when you see these remasters coming out, 2010, 2012, 2015, around that time, all those artists, when they had that capability to work with that material, that when they had the capability to buy their stuff,
okay, so this
they would buy it.
So this is around 2000 or so that this suddenly started becoming more trending thing for these
about
masters
the
tens, to be bought.
About the 20 teens. So
this is post the fire that was spoken of in one of our previous podcasts.
Yes, but Metallica was owned by Warner and Rush.
Just wondering if
this may have been a factor.
If the fire may have been the factor of everybody trying to get their the rumblings were there, and the public at large wasn't told what the thing was. As we revealed in the podcast, it was kept a secret to the public. But if the music industry was like, nope, we're going to start buying back our masters because we could have lost them, maybe there were some rumblings that
there very well could have. Quick side note, we talked about the UMG fire on a previous podcast. Yeah. Basically, Universal kept all their masters in a single building. That building went up in a fire.
And then they didn't tell
on
the media
Universal
about
lot,
it for
they told zero
eight,
artists for like
years?
10 years.
Yeah.
10, 11 years they kept it hidden. And they were saying, oh, it's just a couple of film things. Maybe, you know.
But a lot more so on, a lot more things may have possibly been. A
couple hundred thousand bucks worth of material, blah, blah, blah. Not a big deal. No, it was like over 700
artists.
To
get the full story of that, check out our backlog of podcasts. It'll be up in there for you to see. It'll give you the full story of what happened in the UMG fire, but
yeah,
I mean,
we're considering this as obviously this could very well be a possible factor.
Yeah, could it have been a factor that the music industry people knew about this and started scrambling to grab their stuff? But anyway,
totally. UMG tells Def Leppard, "You can't buy them." Def Leppard's like, "We got the cash in hand right now. We want to buy them. We want to buy our masters. We want to start re-releasing them. We want to do greatest hits."
Did they get damaged in the fire? Good question.
Who knows, right? But basically, the only explanation they have at this point is, "You can't have them." And Def Leppard's like, "Why? Why can't we have them?" They're like, "You just can't have them." And so Def Leppard goes back and defaults to the original agreement in their contract that stated, "You cannot use our masters without our express permission, regardless of whether or not we own them." So Def Leppard sends a breakup letter to UMG in 2012. Okay.
Okay.
There's like, "We are ending our contract with you right now. We have the right to do that. It's lined out in the contract as of this page." Oh, also as of this page, in this letter that they break up with them, they state, quote, "No matter what you want, you will get no for an answer. So don't bother asking."
As far as the usage of their music.
The usage of their music. Wow. Now, the usage of this music can be used in what I was talking about earlier. Commercial spots, football games, video games, like all of this usage.
Yeah.
Whenever you throw a song into a video game or on football or something, the artist gets paid.
Yeah,
the label gets paid
involved
and splits profits with the artist once the artist has paid themselves back.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, the artist pays himself back with touring on a record. They start a new contract with another record, round the merry-go-round. That's how this works. Okay? So basically, at this point, what Def Leppard is saying to them, to UMG, is, "You might have the masters, but you can't do squat with them. No greatest hits records again, no re-releases, no remasters. You can't use them. So now, you're sitting on those, and that's it. You're done. They can't do anything with them." So in the middle of this, that was only half of the conclusion of this legal issue and this master's issue. What they end up doing is in 2012, they decided to announce and re-record what they called forgeries of their original entire back catalog that was under Universal.
So they go and re-record it because they didn't have access to the masters.
They didn't have access to those masters, and Universal wanted to...
They call them forgeries in an attempt to thwart Universal from having legal action saying, oh, you're re-recording things that we own.
Well, here's the deal. Whether or not... Now, they were just calling those that because instead of recording covers of those material, they're calling them forgeries because what they did was they extensively found out what they had done with, because you could get a stereo recording of that stuff.
Yeah.
Right. So what they did in the studio was they researched and got a team of engineers to find out what instruments and what pieces and what material was used in every single one of those original recordings so that they could completely duplicate the entire process. I'm talking.
No, I get what you're saying. I get what you're
that
saying.
Was used,
for people that are non musicians and non recording people that have recorded music, I would refer you to find on YouTube old episodes of what was the MTV show where they would discuss a single album?
Behind the Music?
Yeah, it was Behind the Music they discussed a single
album. That's a VH1, but yeah.
It was a VH1?
Yeah,
okay.
VH1 was Behind the Music.
They would do a specific album, and what they do is they actually are able to access the master recordings of that album, and they got the big board in front of them, and they're able to isolate the different things on the board.
Yeah.
As far as which instruments are doing which sound and whatnot.
Yeah.
That if you don't have the master recording, you don't have the capability.
Exactly.
Of isolating
so they
those
isolate
things.
That and they go, okay, they didn't have those multi-track masters. They had the stereo recordings, but they had to have engineers go through and break them down and go, okay, you used this mic on this cab, on this amp, which was this head, which was blah, blah, blah. And they go through and they technically broke down every single bit and piece to try to recreate it in some fashion. That is a huge undertaking.
Oh, yeah,
aside from that,
and
like personal notes that they may have had for the sessions at the time that they were recording.
Well, to go and be able to identify the down to the brand of microphone. And
that
the
takes,
brand of,
yeah, I mean, that takes a level of mastery that is pretty much unheard of. And which is, that's, I have a lot of, now me myself, I love hearing covers. I love hearing re-recordings because it's a different take on something that you're already familiar with. And sometimes I myself like to study those textures. I like to do that. That's something that fascinates the hell out of me.
Yeah.
So this is something that I'm like, okay, let's see what they can do with this. Joe Elliott, the singer of Def Leppard, he's like, yeah, I'm 50 and I had to find out how to sing like I was 22. Like, I had to go back because the way I sing these notes is completely different now. So it's going to sound inaccurate. But we had to do this like we were doing it back then, back in the day. So we've got, you know, band members that have passed that their parts have to be completely recreated, and guys that were doing one thing that they're not doing now.
You have a two-arm drummer and now a one-arm drummer?
Yeah.
And he, I mean,
they had to figure out how to do all this stuff. It's insane.
I mean, his kid is able to make it so he can do the things live and at least halfway replicate what he did originally for the sound in a live setting.
Right.
But yeah, to be able to re-record that with the same type of sound that he, I mean, luckily within the recording process, he can record bits and pieces at a time. He doesn't have to sit and, you know, knock out the whole song in one flat take.
Right, exactly. You know, so but, learning how to do this hit by hit and note by note and pitch by, you know, vocal formants, everything so pristine. And so they go to they get these
basically,
and they're,
basically
they start
a big, this is a big FU to UMG.
Yeah, totally.
Because like, oh, okay, you're not going to let us buy our stuff. FU, we'll just
re-record it.
We'll replicate the whole thing again, and we'll put all this damn work in because it's better for us to put this work in than for us to deal with your crap.
Yeah. So
to me, I like that. By the way, that level of stubbornness. Like, I'm the type of stubborn to do that kind of thing. Like, oh, you say I'm not going to do this? I'm going to do the best at it. I'm going to do it better than anybody's ever done it.
Yeah.
I'm going to get the gold star for it. And then I'm going to stand in front of you with that damn gold star on my chest and be like, look, you said I wasn't going to do it? Oh, I more than did it.
Yeah.
Now you see it.
Yeah, exactly. Now, this is back in 2012.
Okay.
This is back when Def Leppard didn't have any digital distribution yet.
Okay.
So they hadn't caught on to that train. because all of that, like licensing and all that other kind of stuff, that wasn't really for some of the older artists. Maybe some of the recordings were there, but they weren't like fully there. I think some of the records were there, but some of the other ones weren't. Okay. So some of the records for like a lot of these B-sides and stuff, I think the farthest that UMG went was like their major hits. So Def Leppard originally recorded like 6 or 7 major hits separately, and then they went back through and recorded entire albums worth of back catalog.
Wow.
Because they knew. Because here's the difference between like how that works, by the way. You have two different types of major royalties that happen when you're recording a song. Well, there's a few. So there's the rights to the recording are split into two different types of rights. One is songwriting royalties.
Okay.
And then another one is called performance royalties.
Okay.
Now, when you have a original recording, a master recording, and you are signed under a label that owns that master recording, that label co-owns, dependent upon the agreed percentage between the label and the artist,
right?
They own songwriting and performance royalties of that master recording. So they split that with the artist, okay, in a certain whatever agreed percentage. And then a lot of the time, the artist's rights and royalties to that album, in their scent, in their stake of that, it's given, it basically is filtered through the label. So the label throws a bunch of money at the artist, and then the artist pays back in royalties their loan from the label.
Yeah.
So the label owns that stuff. And then once they get past owning their loan, now they're, or they get past paying that loan, now they're getting paid whatever that percentage is. And the label still owns that cut of royalties. So when it gets past that, then you're pretty much okay. It depends on how fast it sells. It depends on what they're doing for tour. Sometimes a label will even negotiate in tour contracts and stuff. But when we're coming down to performance royalties and songwriting royalties on a song, that's the master recording. That's the performance of that recording at any point, instrumental or otherwise, and then the rights to the lyrics. So that gets split up and just convoluted within this contractual obligation that's within the original agreement. Now, what Def Leppard does, when they take a song and when an artist records a song, a cover of another artist, because this is kind of legally where this sits, the artist obviously doesn't retain the original songwriting royalties, of course, but they do retain the rights to the performance of that song.
Yeah.
So the Makes label sense. Or the owner of the original master recording of the original song and the rights to that song's progression and songwriting and so on, they take that, but the performance of said song is owned by the other artist. So what happens is it splits the rights of the recording between the new recording artist and the original recording artist.
Yeah.
So everybody gets paid whatever percentage that is. And that varies with the agreement of your original song or the agreement of the performance recording of the artist.
Yeah.
Now, what essentially that does is, this is very loose math, so I kind of have to break this down relatively quickly. But when an artist re-records it, they're owning the performance royalties for that new recording.
Yeah.
So what happens with Def Leppard is Def Leppard's re-recorded forgeries of those original songs that sound as identical as they possibly can. By the way, Mutt Lange put his stamp of approval on this, and he's the guy that recorded the original recordings.
Well, there you go.
So Mutt Lange hears the re-recordings from when Phil Collin goes to his house and says, "Hey, you got to hear this real quick. We did this. Here's Pour Some Sugar on Me." When he's like, "Yeah, what's the big deal?" He's like, "We just recorded this in 2012. And Mutt's like, "That sounds just like the original." And Phil's like, "Yeah, I know. That's what I wanted to hear from you. Perfect. Thanks. We're going to go ahead and put this out because UMG is screwing us."
Okay.
So Mutt's like, flipping sweet, dude, because Mutt has no obligation to UMG. Yeah. So anyways, what ends up happening to this is Def Leppard now owns the masters to the new recordings piece by piece, bit by bit. They can omit vocals, do instrumental versions, sell to commercials, those recordings. The only thing that UMG ends up getting that they're keeping because they won't sell
is the small percentage of the songwriting.
Is like maybe 5% of that.
Nice.
Basically, under all of that math, 5%
UMG is still getting something out of it. So.
Oh, yeah, they're getting something. You can't completely omit them because they're not selling that right out, but they're refusing to take Def Leppard's lump sum of cash for those recordings. So Def Leppard turns around and goes, "Okay, fine. We're just going to re-record all our material, put it out on our own record, and UMG, you can't do squat with that because you need our
What happens next since then with Def Leppard?
Well, basically, Def Leppard the power rests in Def Leppard's hands on these re-recorded masters. So their stuff is now taking their stuff. Basically, the original recordings are starting to take a back seat because at any point, Def Leppard can be hit up themselves for any of these recordings that sound just like the originals. That means that if Def Leppard needs to be put in a film, it's their 2012 version or 2013 version of X song that's being used for that recording because UMG can't be hit up anymore.
UMG can't do anything about it.
They can't do squat. So it puts the power back in the artist's hands rather than, you know, Metallica buying out the originals.
UMG still hasn't given up the originals to them.
Oh, no, they can't. They won't.
Well, what if
they totally can if they decide to.
Yeah, well, no, what if?
Well, essentially, it's not lucrative to
no, but what if they what if they actually can't?
Ah, yeah, you're right.
What
if
they
physically
can't, and that's the issue.
Well, too bad. UMG loses both ways.
Wow.
And even if they did digital backups, fine, that's cool, whatever. But yeah, I mean, in that case, both entities lose. But with this, Def Leppard has now taken that they broke the system. And I think it's fantastic. That is straight up rock and roll at its root form. Take everything that you can from everything that you make.
That's
huge, man.
That's a big thing for what most people consider just some dumb 80s hair band.
Dude, so let me tell you, like that amount of, and like I said, Def Leppard's always been a guilty pleasure to me. Like personally,
I shouldn't feel guilty about it.
Me being a pretty vast metalhead, listening to a lot of heavy stuff. I mean, Def Leppard is, but they're just a good band. Like you can't not enjoy their material.
I mean, dude, you're sitting across from somebody who openly admits to being a Carly Rae Jepsen fan. Okay, well, rephrase: a fan of one Carly Rae Jepsen song. I just love that song. Call Me Maybe.
That's the most
annoying damn thing in the world for most people.
It's very well written.
I love that song.
It's very well written.
And so, but when it comes to guilty pleasures, not worth being guilty about it, sir. Enjoy your love of Def Leppard.
All right, so check this out. There is a similarity between Def Leppard's situation and what just recently happened with Taylor Swift.
And guess what? You're going to tell us about it after the break, aren't you?
That I am.
Fantastic. Okay, we'll take a break now. We're done with Def Leppard?
Yep.
Def Leppard changed the system. That's fantastic. They were able to win.
They totally did.
Of course, again, they may not ever be able to see their original master recordings because they may be burnt and gone.
I know, that sucks.
We don't know. But anyway, when we come back, we'll be talking about Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
Mike had to do research on that, and he loved it.
Oh, yeah, it was fantastic.
All right, we'll talk to you in a minute.
Hey, friends, this is Mike from the Xennial Chronicles reminding you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Zenchron, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N, to keep up to date on all things TXC. And please check out our official website, thezennialchronicles.com, or if that's too much to type, zenchron.com. Thanks again for listening, and now, back to the show.
And we are back, and something interesting, I guess. I never expected to say this as a part of the podcast, but we are going to talk about Taylor Swift, everybody.
Yeah. There are some similarities between Def Leppard and Taylor Swift and their stories.
I will say there is actually a Taylor Swift song that I like.
Which one's
with my Carly Rae Jepsen admission of liking that song. I like Trouble.
Yeah, it's a good one.
And isn't that a Dr. Luke or who is that?
I'm not very familiar.
What's the other guy? The Swedish guy.
Max Martin?
Yes. I think it's a Max Martin song.
That makes sense.
Which makes total sense.
The best of the pop hits, the best of the pop hits.
Max Martin is involved in
Max
some way
Martin is a major songwriter, if not the songwriter, for like the best pop hits of the last like 30 years.
And then, of course,
insane.
I love the version of Trouble that has the screaming goats in it.
Yes,
because that's.
I was gonna go with that.
That's
one.
That's just beautiful.
Yes.
that was one of the first Screaming Goat videos I saw, and then I've watched compilations of so many other Screaming Goat videos. They're so great. Anyway, let's talk about Taylor Swift and her similar issues to Def Leppard's issues when it comes to master recordings. I'm guessing.
Well, basically, I'll give you a little bit of backstory first, and then we'll talk about the whole issues that have been coming up lately with her. Taylor Swift was signed back in like 2005, 2006. At the time, she was 15 years old. And she was originally...
Hold on, real quick. I just want to add, this is shady shady corporations.
This
major
is shady,
shady corporations,
man.
Taking advantage of teenagers.
Essentially.
You got a teenage two-arm drummer at that time anyway. and a teenage girl with braces and soon to be super long legs. I mean, I guess I don't know why I'm equating all the body part issues, but anyway. So these are just teenagers that are being taken advantage of. Where are their parents?
Where are they? Their parents are negotiating the damn contracts.
Their parents are failing them.
Yes, they are.
They have failed their children.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, this gets crazy. Okay, so check this out. So Taylor Swift moves to Nashville when she's like 15 years old, okay? And she decides to pursue a career in country music. And she shows that she has the capability of – she really has the capability of writing and co-writing very, very well. She knows how to write a hook. She knows how to write lyrics. And she knows how to write melodies. And everyone who's co-written with her has actually said this even back when she was like – younger, when she was in like high school. She just knew how to do it. A lot of people would essentially compare her to, at the time, Avril Lavigne, because of how good she was at writing lyrics and music. That first album was practically written by Avril by herself.
Compare her to Avril Lavigne. They should compare her to the actual first artist in since recording all the RIAA stuff, whatever that is.
Yeah.
All that was being tracked and whatnot. The first one to actually write a gold record at the age of like 15.
Mm-hmm.
And she was the youngest artist to write it. I think the youngest one to win a Grammy Award and have number one record and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
That was back in the 80s.
Was it Madonna?
No, Debbie Gibson.
Really?
She wrote her own material? She wrote all of her own material, dude.
I did not know that.
Yes. See, okay.
That's fantastic.
Again, you're talking about Def Leppard as being your
guilty pleasure. Yeah.
Again, not guilty. Huge Debbie Gibson fan in the 80s. Love Debbie Gibson.
All right.
And not just for her music. She was hot. Still is hot. But I had major, major crush and love for Debbie Gibson. And that I didn't even know back then that she wrote her own music. I didn't find that out till later. But yeah, her first album, everything written by her. Actually, her first two albums, everything written by her.
I did not know that. That's great.
Yes, she was the youngest artist to get is either a Grammy or number one record or gold or platinum, whatever it was, whatever the thing was. She was the youngest artist to ever have that happen for. So if you're going to be comparing Taylor Swift to somebody that is truly talented, Debbie Gibson should be the comparison. I'm just saying.
Dude.
Go on.
Okay. That's cool. I didn't know that. Now, she originally signed at around 15 years old to RCA Records, I believe, and then terminated her contract because she just didn't like the business.
Okay.
And she signed with a small indie label that allowed her more control of her songwriting. I think that was what was going on with it because RCA is like, don't worry about it. We'll write all your music for you. You're going to do what we want. And she's like, no, I'm writing and I have my team of co-writers and I have all this stuff. I will not let you replace all these people. I'm doing this stuff on my own.
Yeah, I'm not just going to be your talking head.
So she, yeah, exactly. That's what it is. She's like, I'm going to find somebody that markets me and knows what I'm worth. So she already had that mindset back when she started. Now, one of the things that she did do was sign a contract under an indie label called Big Machine Records at the time. Back in 2006, these guys are tiny, but indie labels also know the contractual thing with the whole rights to the masters deal, right? Yeah. Okay, so originally what happened is she debuts in 2006. She is one of the very, very few artists. I think she, at the time, during the aughts, she was like the only artist to reach 157 consecutive weeks with a debut album at 15 years old. She is a powerhouse that is very under-recognized by a lot of people that don't listen to pop.
I can see that.
She is very under-recognized by her validity is very under-recognized. And I personally, you gotta
think about the fact that Kanye West himself didn't think she deserved the accolades that
tell me about it, dude. Like, and there all these false comparisons and all that kind of stuff, dude. Throw that out the window and listen to this. You guys, like, some of you people listening to this, if you don't dig on her, you might dig on her after this,
maybe
just for the sake of the integrity that she has as a person and as an artist and the fact that she's able to fight the power on this kind of control issue. So basically what ends up happening is she signs her rights to her masters over to Big Machine Records, as you do when you're a young artist.
Yeah.
Now, at the time that she was doing this, she was managed by a manager whose name will continue to pop up in this, named Scooter Braun. I don't know if you know his name, if you've heard of his name, but basically this guy...
I just from my personal experiences in life, you never trust a dude named Scooter.
Well, maybe she should have listened to this, because her management relationship with Scooter was very tumultuous, especially when it came down to live performance stuff, tours, and all this kind of stuff. Okay. So her relationship with Scooter Braun was extremely tumultuous, and they had a really bad falling out when she fired him as a manager. Yeah. As a matter of fact, at one point, she did call him an incessant manipulative bully, essentially, okay. Right? When it comes down to management, though, you're not supposed to have that kind of stuff happening. That person is supposed to represent that, you and look out for your best interest because it takes care of their best
interest. I just want to say that's some, like... That's some, like, pumpkin spice drinking Karen-level insult right there.
Right? Well, that makes sense. We are talking about Taylor Swift here.
Yeah.
You know? Now, that being said, if we fast forward to today, let's just say she goes through, she records six debut albums under Big Machine Records. Six albums, her debut being one of them. Yeah. And we're talking like 1989 is one of them. We're talking, like, there's a lot of this stuff that, that really, like... She churns out the hits left and right for these guys, right? And they own the master's rights to this to these recordings because it's like, I think it's about that 5 or 6 record contract that she has with them. So when she first signs with them, they're like 5, 6 records, whatever.
I'm trying to come up with some kind of phrase of like, she causes them or they cause her trouble and she just has to shake it off and whatnot, but it's not coming out right. But anyway, go on.
Okay, so...
trying to be witty and it's not working.
That's okay. So essentially, you fast forward today, okay?
Okay.
And after years of building this musical empire that she has and earning millions of dollars, she finally has the cash in hand to buy back the masters, which was...
This sounds familiar.
I know, right? Which was declared to a monetary value in the contract...
Of course.
Of,
because that's the whole point. I mean, to me, that's the whole point. Is like, we're going to role play a little bit.
Yeah.
You're the music artist. I know this is a stretch for you.
Oh, man.
It's hard for you to envision.
I don't know if I can do this.
I'm going to be the sleazy executive.
Deal.
Not as much of a stretch for me as I would like it to be. Anyway, so, Mikey here, we got this contract for you. Now, here's the deal. Uh-huh. We're going to be putting forth all this money. We're going to be doing, you know, setting up the recording stuff for you.
Okay.
You're going to be coming into our studio to record.
Okay.
You know, we got this producer guy. He's fantastic.
Okay.
So you're going to sign into this, and we're going to take care of all that. But we're putting an investment in this, and that means that, you know, we should have some ownership of these recordings as well, because this is us putting all this money, all this time, all these resources in. I know you're worried. I know you're thinking this is your material. You wrote this. Mm-hmm. You created this.
I
you're
the artist. I wrote all this stuff.
So here's the thing. We're going to share this right now. But part of that is because it's our investment. We're putting this money in. We're having faith in you. We want to share this thing that you've made, man. We want to be a part of this. But we're gonna make sure that you're going to get the chance to have these completely yours. Because what happens is,
we own
part of
this.
We own part of this right now because we're putting this money in.
Yeah.
And you're going to make this money. When you make enough money off of this, because you're going to make, look, we've shown you what percentage you're going to get, man.
Okay.
When you've made enough money.
Well, I mean, that's kind of small, I guess.
Well, when you've made enough money, man, here's what you can do. You can buy the rights back from us. You get to buy it back.
Wait, so you mean at the end of all this, I could buy it back?
You could buy the rights to this, so we don't own it anymore.
So this is kind of like on loan from me, then, right?
Yeah, we're kind of loaning it to you. We're putting this money up front because we have faith in you, and you can buy it back from us later.
Man.
You're going to get a chance to have it back. It'll be all yours.
If I could get him back later, that'd be cool.
I mean, because you got to give us something because we got to put this in.
I mean.
We have the faith in you, man. We have the faith. We want to make this happen.
What else? Okay, wait a minute. I got a question for you here. Because I know that you're throwing all the money into the building of the recording and all that kind of stuff. Is that my trade here? Is that what it is?
It's like if you're going to buy a car, you got to put some money down, right? But we're not asking you to put money down. We're just asking you to put, this is like a collateral. Like a collateral.
I would really like those masters, but
you'll get them.
So you're telling me that if I don't...
Are you not going to make this money? We've heard these songs. Are you not going to make this money, man?
Wait, question then.
It's going to come in.
Oh, right, I get it. Question. So does that mean that, like, so you're telling me that if I let you guys have these for temporary, for right now, we're sharing them.
It's not just ours, we're making money. It's yours too. We're sharing it. We're friends together sharing this. We're partners together sharing this, man. I mean, I'd like to not have to do it this way, but you and me are talking. But there are people in that office there, and they have to have the faith too. But their faith is all about money.
Oh, man.
My faith is in you. My faith is in you. I hear your music. I love it. My faith is in you. But I need to give them something, and this is what I'm giving them. this sharing of this. So they share in the spoils just like you share in the spoils.
I mean,
but when the spoils come all the way, you get to have it back as yours. And that means we got our part that we helped put you in. We're happy, you're happy, and you own your stuff. Just may take a little time, but I have faith in you, man. I have faith in you.
I think that sounds okay. That's
should
probably
I be,
all right.
Should I be an executive? Dude, look on your face.
You laid it on thick. That was great, man. That was fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you, theater.
Oh, God,
degree.
I wish I had the cameras on that one, man. Oh, that was good.
Did I break you?
Music business 101 here. That was a lesson, man. That was fantastic. So, all right. So
don't get pulled in by this.
That was great.
Bring James along to your negotiation. So we see how this can happen.
Yeah.
This makes sense how
this
would happen.
No, that's exactly how it plays out. That is like how it plays out when that happens. People get so you have to get sold on this hard. Yeah. I mean, dude, good hard sell.
Thank you.
It on thick. But you have to get sold on that concept. And it literally just takes a conversation like that to completely throw the fate of your power of your music completely off the rails.
And I mean, I was stumbling Mike just a tiny bit with my delivery. Imagine if I'm doing it sitting in an office with a studio right by. Because I mean, if I'm really selling
dude,
this,
you're laying it on.
I've walked you past the
it's
studio.
All presentation.
I've had you see another artist recording. I've got all the stuff I got stuff on my walls that are gold records on the walls.
Yeah.
If I don't have them on my walls, I've walked you past them.
Here's the thing.
I've made you feel like you need this.
Yeah, that's the pitch. I don't give you money. And you let me have all this stuff, and all I have to do is
record the music,
and
share this with us. Share it with us.
Yeah,
be in a partnership with us. We're in this together.
Yeah,
us
exactly.
against the world.
Yep,
makes sense why people would sign into that.
Yeah, it totally does. Especially if you're a kid.
Yeah,
she was a kid, man.
And the parents,
and her parents
there.
Who don't know much about it. I mean, I'm assuming so. Now, on top of that, just to let you know, her dad ended up buying a 3% stake in Big Machine Records at the time. Obviously,
which is not
you said
a bad idea.
Affluent family, right. So he's making some extra profit on top of that, too.
Yeah.
Little by little share, her and other artists that are under that label.
Yeah.
Right? So this looks like a good business deal, right?
But
on surface level, it looks like a good business deal. Now, that being said, she eventually wanted to buy her rights out to her masters. She wanted to buy her masters out from Big Machine. So she shows up to Big Machine in 2018. 2019, or actually she said she's had it for years. So let's say it's been 2016, 2017.
Okay.
She's going to Big Machine Records, which is now this big label because they wrote on her back.
Of course.
Right? For these first six albums, she's like, I got the cash in hand. I'm ready to do this. I want to buy my masters out. It says in the contract, it's this amount of money. I've got this money. Let's go. And Big Machine says, no, we don't want to do it. We've changed our minds. We don't want to do this. And Big Machine holds on to Taylor Swift's records, even though she's got the cash in hand for years. And she starts to continue to make more albums and more singles, and she continues to make money. This, by the way, this lady took down Spotify and Pandora, remember?
Yeah.
She was somebody that was so strong with her digital distribution that she ended up rewriting contracts with the biggest streaming platforms on the planet.
Yeah, that's a plural.
He's
emphasizing the plural.
Yeah, not just Pandora. She took down Spotify. She's talking YouTube to renegotiate her rights to her royalties from them so she could make real money from streaming because she's that big.
Yeah,
now, she ain't Paul McCartney big. She ain't Paul McCartney put a big black square over the top of my house, Google Maps, because I don't want you to map out my house. But she's big enough to tell Spotify and Pandora to suck it. Like, that's fantastic.
Wow.
So this is the amount of power that she's able to have.
She wields it.
And
definitely.
She ain't even 30 yet. She's like 26, 27 years old at this time.
I feel so unaccomplished in my life.
Right, me too. Now, that being said, here's what ends up happening.
Oh.
In 2019, just a few weeks ago, it's been confirmed.
Topical.
Super topical. After Big Machine refuses to sell the masters to Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
Big Machine, the record label, goes up for sale.
She didn't. Oh, God. That would have been awesome.
No. Much worse. Scooter Braun buys Big Machine.
Oh.
The manager that was effing her the whole time at the beginning, that they had this huge falling out, Scooter Braun has also come up into some money. And he's big enough to buy Big Machine, the record label. So now that means Scooter Braun owns Big Machine, which owns the rights to the first six records.
Wow.
That she made. Taylor's pissed.
Yeah.
So here's what happens. Taylor essentially says of Braun buying Big Machine, quote, I quote, "Essentially, my musical legacy is about to lie in the hands of someone who tried to dismantle it. Never in my worst nightmares did I imagine the buyer would be Scooter Braun, of all people."
Okay.
RCA could have bought it, and she wouldn't have cared, because she could have still been able to negotiate with RCA.
I can smell the pumpkin spice coming off of that comment.
Dude,
but
her haircut still changed, and she demanded to see the manager.
Yeah.
Like, this is some serious, serious mad white girl stuff.
Yes.
All right? So, Taylor's...
Can we say that?
What, mad white girl?
Yeah.
Angry white girl?
Can we really say that?
Oh, I mean, yeah, dude.
Are we allowed to comment on that?
Oh, yeah.
We'll talk about that another time. Go on.
She's fuming. Now, Taylor's first six albums, as a recap,
yeah,
were under Big Machine, and they are now owned by Scooter Braun.
Yeah, we got that.
So, under Scooter, Big Machine Records gives Taylor Swift an offer about her six albums that she wants to buy.
Oh, God.
You ready for this? This is fantastic.
Yeah.
All right. They offer her a deal that states for every, they're like, we want more albums from you. So here's how we're going to do it. For every album you record and release under Big Machine Records, we will give you and sign over the rights to the original masters for one of those albums. So it's a one-for-one trade deal. You record a new album for us, and we'll give you 1989, and then we'll give you Taylor Swift, and then we'll give you this album and this album. So they're trading the rights to the masters with Taylor for another album. So it's a one-for-one deal.
I get you.
At the end of all of it, Taylor Swift, now the huge, like, billion-dollar powerhouse that she is.
Around, basically.
Yeah, she's one of the most... she's coming up on being white Beyonce. Let's be real.
Okay.
She's getting that big, and she's doing it on her own back.
Yeah.
She is getting that big.
She's completely
overshadowed Katy Perry. Do you remember Katy Perry? I haven't seen anything Katy Perry's done since A Dancing Shark and the kid that does the Fortnite dance at a Super Bowl. That's the last thing I've seen.
She's on one of the...
Lady Gaga isn't as powerful as Taylor Swift right now.
No, Katy Perry, I think, is on one of the... Various I can sing, let's make a competition out of it shows.
Oh, is she?
I think it's America's Got Talent, but I don't know.
I don't know.
Because I don't watch any of those.
I mean, I know Demi Lovato, I think, is still on one of those. No, it's not America's Got Talent.
It's, what was the first one? What was the first
Voice?
One?
No.
No, the very first one. American Idol.
American
She's
Idol.
On American Idol.
I didn't know that.
She's on American Idol. It just hit me in my brain.
Yeah, yeah.
I watched the first season of American Idol, and I stopped after that because it just got bad. First one was okay. It was like, ooh, this is new. This is novel.
Yeah, yeah.
And then...
Kelly Clarkson's on The Voice now, I think.
And Kelly Clarkson, hey, she's a decent
AGT,
singer.
No, she's not on AGT. She's on The Voice.
She's a decent singer, so yeah. it was a good choice.
Taylor's coming up.
She's huge. She's huge. She's beyond coming up. She's huge.
She's huge. So
let's just say this is a deal. One for one. Okay.
So here's the deal. She says they give her this offer, and Taylor just straight up and says, "Fuck that."
Mike has to quack.
Mike's
a duck.
I can't. Well, I'm either a duck or a goat. I haven't chosen.
Be the goat. Make me.
I haven't decided yet.
I've been the duck. You get to be the goat.
Okay, fine. I did goat you last episode, though.
You goated me last episode?
I goated you.
When
you say quack, I
yet.
Flip it up. I flip it up. I quack when you don't say quack, and then I goat when you say quack.
Dang it, because I was just thinking, I know somebody who could actually
draw... I am in control.
I know. It's scary. I have somebody who could actually draw us out like as like anthropomorphic animal thingies, and it would be
so funny to draw
me as a duck and you as a goat. That would be hilarious.
That would be fantastic.
That would be very funny. I may get that worked out. Anyway, go on.
DeviantArt, fan art, go.
So Taylor says F this. See, I'm saying it the right way.
Yeah. And basically, here's what she decides to do.
Uh-huh.
She pulls a Def Leppard. She's going to re-record. She's announced that she is going to re-record her entire back catalog of her first six albums on her own.
Wow.
Now, obviously, I've kind of gone over the details with what's going on with Def Leppard for that and why that's important. But here's the reason why it's different for Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift is huge now. She's also not even 30 yet. She can achieve her 15, 18-year-old, 21-year-old voice now. She can still
do it.
Yeah,
she doesn't really have to work at it in the same way.
She's been training. She's been keeping herself up. She hasn't fallen off of the... She hasn't fallen off the throne at all in this entire time. She's just continued to get bigger.
Yeah.
And she's retained all this.
There's been no downtime.
Yeah.
None of the, and I'm sorry, but Def Leppard was one of the bands definitely known for hard partying ways.
Yeah.
During the 80s, as many, many bands were. But Def Leppard had watched their Behind the Music, a revolving door of
and she's
women
got this dude.
Things.
And she's probably, you know, done her things and had her party days or whatever, but she hasn't abused herself.
But she's not doing drugs, drinking, smoking cigarettes, destroying her voice, none
she's
of that.
She's still rocking like cardio and kombucha and yoga, man. Like she's still doing all that stuff that since she's been doing in high school.
When she parties,
because she knew that she was going to be this powerhouse.
Yeah, when she parties, it's like a birthday party for her cats. Her cats have like the funniest names. I don't remember them, but I just remember that they're really funny.
Oh, dude, she's a famous cat lady.
She's got
how much more does she have? She's got nothing but an empire.
Yeah.
Like, and all she has to do is keep having crappy relationships and she'll stay at the top of the musical spectrum for life. She's a cat lady.
That's a bit misogynistic, but go on. So she's re-recording all of her music now in a similar vein to Def Leppard. But again, the fact that she's so young, it'll probably come out a lot better.
No, she could make a career. And I don't mean to necessarily, I don't think that necessarily comes off misogynistic. I just mean that she could write breakup music until she's 60. And still be awesome the entire time.
Okay.
There's more power to her. Like, do it. You know what I mean?
I think Mike...
That's all I'm saying.
I think Mike has another guilty pleasure. Taylor Swift.
Dude, she's awesome.
Okay.
I'll say it right now. More power to her. Just this alone. This situation alone in itself is just fantastic. Mad respect to Taylor Swift for being to take this. Guilty pleasure for me, honestly, like, complete side point, Kesha. That's a guilty pleasure.
Early Kesha, the
no.
Dr. Luke wrote stuff.
No,
current
late
Kesha.
See, current Kesha is awesome.
Current Kesha,
just because it's about self empowerment for her after all that crap that she went through for the past three years, and then coming back and kicking ass.
I get that. I'll be honest. I just don't like the music as much. It sucks because the music that I do like of it.
What's the trade off of being a hitmaker?
I know.
You know what I mean? Here's the deal. Yeah, Bill Cosby's comedy was great, but who's gonna watch it now?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's the same
BS. She had to deal with such awful abuse for those songs to happen that way. I will say this much. I'm glad she ditched all the makeup because she's actually really pretty without all the makeup.
She is.
That's a very much misogynistic thing to say also, but I feel like when she did makeup to try to put on
the
character.
There's nothing wrong with it. I personally don't see anything wrong with it.
Just the fact that I'm saying that I'm commenting on her physical appearance, that can be taken as a misogynistic thing.
That I can understand. I personally see more than just the physical appearance about it. I'm curious as to whether or not, like, because I knew that she was marketed as a counterculture icon, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, that was her thing. And so and I don't mean this in an insulting fashion, but the trashy, you know, homeless chic that she kind of had going, which was on purpose because that was part of the marketing. She was supposed to be counterculture. I think that might have been pushed on her. Maybe that was something that she had an image. I think that might have been pushed on her because she didn't seem very comfortable in the middle of all of that, especially with the abuse that was going on.
Yeah, the abuse.
You know. But that being said, that's completely out the wayside.
Yeah. Back to Taylor.
At this point, this is what happens, just like with Def Leppard, okay?
Okay.
She is able to, if she records her entire back catalog, she is able to sell and distribute and use for commercial use those beats and that backing music at any point, omit vocals, do whatever she wants. She can manipulate those original tracks to anybody that wants it. She's selling to commercials, she's doing all this kind of stuff, and it doesn't matter as to whether or not the original music is owned by Big Machine. They don't have to be the first and only people. Here's the cool thing about that. When Def Leppard did it, nobody flipping knew about it. Rolling Stone put out an article about it. But there wasn't really this big thing. And the reason why I knew about it is because I was looking up... I took a music business course in 2012. And I happened to find out about it before Def Leppard had actually done it, because it was part of a artist retaining royalties and artist
part
royalties
in
business.
In the class.
It's a music business thing they were teaching in class at the time. So I learned that because of all of these other artists that were doing it, and I didn't understand fully why.
You should hook me up with that. With if you're still in contact with any of the professors or anything, hook me up to come in and do a demo of what a record exec is going to try to sell you.
Totally.
I think I pulled that one off good.
Yeah, yeah. That was good. Now, that being said, being that she retains the performance royalties and all this kind of stuff, a lot of people would look at an artist that may not be as valid and scoff at that. But Monday Night Football or whoever decides, or freaking Pizza Hut, or whoever decides to go, hey, we want your song, we'll buy it from you, they'll go straight to Taylor Swift now. Well, they don't have to use the middleman.
To use an example of how other media beyond just the CDs or just the music can make a band so much more money than any of their music ever did.
Yeah.
The band Aerosmith.
Yeah.
Do you know what their single biggest money-making venture was?
No. I don't.
Guitar Hero.
Oh, that makes total sense.
The Guitar Hero game that they did, the Aerosmith Guitar Hero game?
Yeah.
They made more money off of that than any of their albums or any single tour that they ever did.
I remember hearing about that.
Yeah.
The licensing did they buy their masters? Did they re-record stuff?
I think they owned everything.
Okay.
Whatever
so,
got on there, they
And
owned.
These guys had been around for like 40 years at the time, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's Aerosmith, so this is back in the aughts.
Okay, yeah. Well, late aughts, early tens.
Yeah, when the Guitar Hero craze was the big thing.
Yeah.
They did their Guitar Hero and made tons of money. I don't know if Metallica ever disclosed how much money they made off of their Guitar Hero.
I could see them making, well, at that time they did that, that was still under Warner.
Okay.
Remember, Metallica didn't buy their masters until 6 or 7 years after that happened.
So, I mean, I don't know how much. But
even, they would have had, they would have, you they know, they would gotten, have made some cash.
They still would have gotten some money off it because their likenesses are in there.
Yeah. And well, that, and that's something you can't buy off of Warner. Yeah, yeah. You can't buy that off of Warner.
But, I mean, and they did motion capture for them.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. If you actually go into the game, there's some, hidden content
cool.
where you can see them do some of the motion capture actually have to do some of the re-recording of some
so
of the
they're
stuff.
Buying the mocap they're in the green mocap tennis ball suits
some of them are in the suits
yeah
and,
that's great
they actually have Lars doing the drumming on I don't even know which song I'd have to watch the thing again it's a song from one of the first three albums
cool
that, no it's off of Justice it's something off of Justice that he had he couldn't even keep up with the original track
ah!
it was so fast but anyway, I mean, the ability to license to other medium will get you so much more money than what just your simple music sales, just the simple CD album sales, whatever is going to do. The ability to license that music in so many other ways, and now she'll have that. She's again,
yeah.
just like Def Leppard, she's kind of, bypassed the system to take control. Of her stuff again, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, it is really nice.
It's
and
still
that's a huge
sad.
Thing.
It's still sad that we have that predatory practice when it comes to music.
For sure.
I mean, she and the funny thing is, her start in her music was before the days of heavy YouTube rotation.
Yeah.
Before the days of YouTube. Period.
Yeah.
But before the days of all that heavy rotation, there are a lot of artists now that don't go the same route when it comes to the label signing.
Yeah.
And distribute their stuff through YouTube and become stars that way. And it's a whole different
exactly.
deal now.
Exactly.
Which is kind of nice. I mean, again, that retains the ability to own your product and control your image in your hands. You may not get the meteoric rise as easily, but right. it does happen.
Yeah, it does. It's huge. A couple more comments about this to end this off. Basically, here's the deal. Like Def Leppard, Taylor retains her performance royalties.
Yeah.
And she splits the songwriting royalties with Big Machine.
Yeah.
Okay. But the thing is being that she is somebody who is approachable as an independent artist now, while she records all this stuff and retains all those masters, now at this point, this invalidates Big Machine as a label in regards to Taylor Swift. And it cuts Scooter Braun right off the knees. They don't need to go to him. And honestly, she'll probably sell those rights for cheaper. He might be able to do that stuff with it, but that's the thing is she can sell covers or re-recordings and call them that release.
But I could see how he could. I could see how he could try to cut her off at the knees as well.
He could.
He could try to offer a much lower price for this.
He could, and you could have competitive pricing over the two masters, which is fine. But here's the underlying factor. What is the majority of Taylor Swift's fan base?
Teenage girls.
Teenage girls. Millennials in general. Remember, she's been around for 15 years.
Yeah.
So you got girls in high school, and you have girls and guys that are in high school now.
15 years? Damn.
Yeah. It's been 2006, so 13 years. She's 29. 13 years, 14 years she's been around. You got kids that were that are in high school now.
I'm so old.
That were born when she was signed. That's how long she's been around.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay? That being said, the big difference between Taylor Swift and Def Leppard is their fan base.
Yeah.
Millennials. Do you know what millennials are going to do? They are in direct contact with Taylor Swift at all times. She has a Tumblr. She has a Twitter.
She has a Facebook page.
She has, so if that music
is used, if that music is used anywhere and it's the original record company, what are they called again?
Big Machine.
Big Machine. So if it's Big Machine, it's found out that it's Big Machine that licensed it because they maybe licensed it for nothing, people are going to be like, what's going on, Tay-Tay?
What are millennials really good at doing to companies?
Pissing them off. Breaking them.
Breaking them. You know how they break them? They boycott them.
Yeah. And funny enough, the millennial generation, for all the things that other generations say bad about the millennial generation.
Oh, they unite like that. Yeah.
They are the first complete generation, regardless of social class, race, religion, anything. They are the first generational group that will boycott en masse.
Yes. They and will like, share information. The information about this stuff will be immediately available.
You go back to like the boomers.
Yeah.
And boycotting was pretty much down racial lines with some exceptions.
Yep.
With the millennials, it's a generational thing. Oh, we need to boycott this. Let's boycott it.
Yeah.
Boom. It's boycotted.
Yeah.
And they are, they
and
know.
They're done. They again, will. Take control.
What was
of
it? Our second or third podcast where we talked about the fact that the internet and social media is not ours as a Zennial. It's not Generation X's.
No.
It's not boomers. Social media is a millennial thing. The millennials own social media.
Oh, yeah. It is absolutely the millennial platform.
And they can use that in that type of thing. So, yeah, that just emboldens Taylor. That gives her the power. She's holding everything at this point.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's what it fully does. So, yeah. So, pretty much long story short, Taylor Swift is going to re-record all of her old albums just to put a middle finger to her old record label. And because her fan base knows every detail about it instantly, She's gonna be just fine.
Yeah, they're gonna support her completely, and they're gonna
absolutely
run that place
100%. Yeah.
Wow. Well, so, this is some enlightening stuff. It's good to see that artists are being able to take care of their music. Hopefully, fans of both Taylor Swift and Def Leppard have been able to learn a few things about the band and artists that they love. Hopefully, people may try to become fans of both of these bands.
I hope so. I mean, that's what rock and roll is now.
That's what I mean. It's there are lines.
That's what fighting the establishment means.
And that's definitely damn the man for sure.
More power to him too.
Damn the man.
All about it.
So thank you for listening. Another interesting, informative episode.
Yeah.
Kind of nice.
Yeah.
So Mike, if people are listening, they're listening on a certain platform. What platforms are they listening to us on?
They're listening to us almost everywhere. So you can check us out at thezennialchronicles.com if you're listening there, or if you would like to listen there. That's our main website, or you can go to zenchron.com, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N. You also can check us out on Facebook, on YouTube. We are also on Twitter. If you look up Zenchron on Facebook and Twitter, you'll find our actual Facebook pages. We do share video type versions of our podcast on Facebook and also on YouTube. And as a little incentive, if you guys would like to check out our YouTube, we actually have the entire archive of all of our podcasts available on our YouTube page. You get there, check them out, see if you like them. If you like them, hit the like button for us. Go ahead and subscribe to the channel and ring the little bell icon to make sure that you know every time we put a new video out.
Also, feel free to comment on the videos. We will comment back. And in commenting back, we will let you know which one of us is speaking to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, audio-wise, you can check us out on Google Podcasts. You can check us out on TuneIn. You can check us out on Spotify and our website, thezennialchronicles.com. So...
fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Y'all have a good one.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.